Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Harris. With me, as always, is my co-host RJ Sines.
Haha, yeah.
We're your in-house comedy gurus who talk about what's funny, why it's funny, and what if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on a bus trying to make his way back home.
What? What the heck was that?
It's just questions that's on my mind, you know?
Ben's having an existential crisis mid-intro.
Today we're talking about that hit NBC comedy that ran from 2005 to 2013... The Office.
Da-na-na, da-na-na, I think I could have made that jingle
sure.
A little bit better.
It's higher.
Ring, ring, ring. Yeah, you're good.
Ring, ring, ring,
ring, ring, ring, ring, ring,
ring, ring, ring, ring, ring, ring, ring. But first, RJ, take us through what's happening in the world of comedy right now.
All right. In Netflix news, Chris Rock, a.k.a. Funny man, comedian, just landed two Netflix specials for the low price of $40 million.
That's how much he has to pay Netflix?
No, dollars, not doll hairs. I want to make sure.
Cool.
Netflix is going to pay him $40 million for two 45-minute shows.
Goodness.
I can't even believe that.
That's sweet. Good for him.
A $20 million show. That's like A-list comedians. That's Jerry Seinfeld, Louis C.K., like selling out the entire Tiki Gardens. Wait, no, what am I thinking of? The Boston Gardens. Tiki Garden, isn't that a football player?
Tiki Barber
is. Tiki Barber. Oh my gosh. No, that's like A-list comedian selling out a huge venue.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about Chris Rock. He's Chris Rock. He's been in the world of comedy for so long now.
But the question is Christopher Rock, is his full name, is Christopher Rock worth $44,000 a minute? Because that's what it adds up to.
That's a lot.
Would you pay anyone, anything, $44,000 a minute?
Well, that's a good question because obviously I can afford that kind of quiche. Well, I'm not super familiar with Chris Rock's stand-up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I think of him on SNL. He makes me laugh. I have good memories of him on SNL. Some of his, like, characters in movies, I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he kind of falls into the category of, you know, just kind of more washed up kind of comedians. I mean, okay. Look at Madagascar cast. Like him, Ben Stiller, Ross from Friends. I always forget his name.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Rachel. I can't hear
him. Can do pivot! Pivot! That's the only, that's for Tony.
Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of feel like, really? He's worth that much?
Right.
Christopher, really? But you know what? Netflix has money to burn. They got that Stranger Things money now, Ben.
I know, huh?
They can just throw down on any old random comedian from the 90s and say, hey, you want a special? You want a special? You want a special? You get 40 million. You get 40 million. You get 40 million.
They're Oprah-ing comedians.
Yeah.
That's good. Good on him. I say, let's see what happens. And if it's funny, then it'll be worth that money. If it's not, then...
You don't get your money, honey.
Netflix just blew their cash.
Yeah, I say Netflix would have a better bang for their buck if they cashed in on my Stranger Cards crossover episode.
House of Things,
yeah. Don't hate the player, hate the game. some box office news... we had the movie Masterminds come out. Ben, have you heard of this movie, Masterminds?
Yeah, I've seen the trailer. I haven't seen the movie, though.
You got Zach Galifianakis, Kristen Wiig, Jason Sudeikis, Owen Wilson, Leslie Jones, Kate McKinnon. Really, like, all over the place cast.
Yeah.
It was supposed to come out last year in August. I actually saw it in a pre-showing when they were doing, like, focus group stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I got to see it before it came out in theaters, and it was just what you would expect, like just kind of like barely cutting it kind of comedy. There's some funny bits, and I genuinely laughed because, I mean, Zach Galifianakis kind of had like this lispy character.
Yeah, his characterization seemed funny. It's not like necessarily the big bearded kind of goofus. It's more like the goatee kind of goofus.
Kind of like
he's grazed
hillbilly.
His biscuits.
Yeah, yes.
I laughed at that in the trailer when he shoots himself in the butt, but then they realize he missed himself. He just grazed his biscuits.
Fugees and Funyuns, like that kind of a, yeah, exactly. I mean it was funny, but again, it's like I wouldn't choose to see it again. Sure. If I like, you know, turned on my TV and it was on, I would change the channel, kind of a thing. But
on a scale from MacGruber to Shrek, what is it?
Oh gosh, if Shrek's a 10 and MacGruber's a 0,
it's a sliding scale.
Oh gosh, it was as funny as MacGruber.
Oh, that bad?
Yeah.
You give it a lot of credit then.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's for the fans. Fans, okay, if you like Zachy G and you like Kristen W, like, it's, you know, it's a good thing to see. You'll enjoy it, I think, but maybe wait till it comes out on VHS. I don't know. Save some dollars.
Buy it on Laserdisc.
Yeah, because this movie is just kind of... You know?
Like a fart in the wind.
Is that what your farts sound like?
It was a firecracker that became a fart in the wind. It's like you lit off. You're like, wait, I paid money for that? It kind of smells in here.
Okay.
Excellent news, RJ. We're moving on now to our next segment, which is the segment called The Topic of the Week. The topic of the week is The Office. The Office, you know, is a NBC sitcom. It began as a British sitcom that ran from 2001 to 2003. Kind of a short run for being such an inspiring thing to inspire what The Office became.
Classic British everything, am I right?
Yeah. Short?
Yeah.
And stout?
No.
Bad teeth? It was created, written, and directed. The British one was created, written, and directed by Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais.
Love those guys.
Classic. Yeah, they're quality.
Modern UK comedy, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Then in 2005, it was adapted for US audience by Greg Daniels. Greg Daniels, a little history on him, was a Harvard grad who wrote for SNL. Then he went to The Simpsons. Some notable episodes that he wrote were Bart Sells His Soul. That's a classic one. 22 Short Stories in Springfield. Both of those are favorites of mine. Then in 1997, Daniels teamed up with Mike Judge to create King of the Hill. And that ran from 97 to 2009, I think. Then in 2005, he adapted the version of The Office that we have and know and love, and had so much success with that that he co-created with one of the writers of The Office, Parks and Rec, this guy, Michael Schur.
Sure.
Michael Schur, who actually on the show you would recognize as Dwight's cousin, Moe's.
The weirdest
The, like,
character.
Neckbeard weird guy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so Greg Daniels, he's the real deal.
He really is. And interestingly enough, this one was almost a wacky fact, he has a lot of ties with Conan O'Brien.
Oh.
They went to Harvard at the same time, became friends. They wrote for the Harvard Herald, I think it was called. They wrote for a newspaper at Harvard together.
Mm-hmm.
Then they leave for a job together that they both got fired from at the same time.
Yeah.
Due to budget cuts. Then after that, Lorne Michaels give them a shot on SNL, and they went to it together. They're doing SNL together. Then Conan leaves SNL for Simpsons. Daniel stays on SNL for a while, and then eventually goes to the Simpsons to write for them. But they kind of transitioned together. Conan, his last day was Daniel's first day writing for the Simpsons.
Star-crossed lovers from
Isn't
the start.
Isn't that awesome? But they're good friends and remain close to this day.
Yeah.
Classic.
A real Romeo and Juliet story. Kind of funny side note. I know you mentioned it. I don't know if I knew they were good friends, but there is an episode where Michael Scott's in New York City, and he's like, I just haven't seen anybody famous. And I think Conan's walking in the background.
That's so good.
Like trying to hail a cab or something. And like, he's the most like obvious character, personality, celebrity. He's like 6'7". He's got bright orange hair.
He's like, I just I love. Oh my gosh, 30 Rock does it. Office does it. They just people just drag Conan through the mud, and he's like on board. Oh, yeah. That's so funny to me. I love people who just completely defame their character, and it's classic funnies.
Yeah. So something that I think is really interesting about Greg Daniels is he comes from this enriched history of comedy
writing
and
yeah.
working with these writers who have created these amazing, amazing shows that still are around today. And already he's, I mean, because of his history there, he's successfully created two of the best sitcoms in the 21st century, Parks and Rec and The Office. Like, this guy knew what he was doing going into these shows and created something just timeless.
Yeah, super good. But yeah, The Office, we're going to tell you why it's funny. This is what we think. The Office is so classically funny because of its juxtaposition of a totally normal setting being in a workplace, office, versus the crazy and over-the-top situations that these characters find themselves in. They have amazingly uncomfortable characters
yeah.
that are just like, they're so funny, yet at the same time, awkward and just
zany, off the wall. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And The Office had this groundbreaking comedic mockumentary style that was brought to television that before The Office really, in America, it wasn't really popular. The mockumentary style wasn't really popular in TV.
Yeah, I can't even remember anything before that. I mean,
right?
Granted, I'm not very old at all, but yeah. I mean, you might know more
than
me.
That's true. You aren't very old.
Like, what, 13, 14? I don't know anymore.
You have such a deep voice for a 13-year-old.
These years are going by.
But yeah, before that, most mockumentaries were in movies. Mm-hmm. I think of like all the Christopher Guest tropes of movies that he had. Spinal Tap in 1984. Waiting for Guffman in 1996. Best in Show. These are like, if you've seen them, you know exactly what style we're talking about, where it's taking a goofy subject and then putting it in the style of a documentary, but it's all fake and they're mocking it.
Like Super Size Me?
No, I think that was a genuine attempt.
I could have sworn it was like some terrible joke. Like it was a comedy.
Because
just
McDonald's
wasn't.
Is so healthy, right?
It was just like a joke. This really, like, it was supposed to be funny, but it was just sad and like... I don't know. It didn't land for me, really. But, I mean, I get where they were going, you know?
No, RJ, I don't think that was a comedy.
Huh. Agree to disagree.
When he's puking in the parking lot, I think that's
the only funny joke, really, was him puking in the parking lot.
But anyway, back to The Office. The mockumentary style allowed for so much rich comedy in the show, bringing in new kind of styles and tropes that in more traditional studio audiences sitcoms kind of missed out on. They were able to like quite literally wink at the camera.
Oh boy, yeah.
Like talk about breaking the fourth wall. They literally were able to look at the camera and wink. Like Jim and Michael, like half of their jokes are literally playing to the audience, playing mm-hmm. to the camera. We'll get to that more in a minute. But
and something I want to note here, a lot of the listeners that we have might not be aware of this, but we, you know, you just talked about the history of the mockumentary, uh-huh. you know, comedy documentary style. This wasn't a thing. It's a thing now.
Right.
Like
yeah.
everywhere, right?
You see it, Parks and Rec, Modern Family.
What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So many different movies, so many different things have happened now in the vein of this documentary style mm-hmm. to the point where I honestly, like if I'm watching a show and it's the mockumentary, I'm like, oh gosh,
right.
This is so overdone. Old. It's so not, you know, it's not good. But The Office, like they did it, like not first, but they really gave it a new repackaging.
For American television audience, it really was kind of the first time we were seeing it.
Right.
This is so cool. But, like, the idea of, they call it a talking head, mm-hmm. which would be, like, those moments where all
the
of a sudden...
The interview.
Yeah, it's an interview style. It's clearly just a single shot of somebody, and they're talking about a lesson they've learned, a truth that they're sharing.
A secret. Yeah.
Just a general thought that they had. But, yeah, that consistent breaking of the fourth wall, just is infused in the style of this show.
Exactly. And even more interestingly about the whole like mockumentary style, they don't really even address this until the last season of The Office, but this crew that is clearly filming them, right?
Right.
You know, they there's many times that people like mention like, oh, look over here, or they're drawing the camera, the characters are drawing the camera towards them, whatever. They're obviously playing towards the camera. They know there's a camera there. We don't even find out what this camera crew is doing until the very last season. The camera crew is its own characterization. Like,
right.
It is its own thing, like this style of, wait, they know they're on camera, yeah. But do they know who they are? Do they know that, like, people at home, like us, right. We're watching it? Or is this for, like, a film festival? Like, what is this kind of
thing?
Some
of my favorite ways that they play to that is, you know, like, pretend this is actually happening to a real, like, office situation of group of people. If you were embarrassed for some reason, you'd run away from the cameras. You wouldn't want them following
right.
you. And they play to that. Like, something will happen where something is, like, you know, a secret or something. And Michael will run into his office and shut the door behind him. And you can see that the cameraman couldn't go through the door.
Right.
They don't have a camera in there. So he's peeking through the blinds.
Yeah, yeah.
You can still hear the audio, which is neither here nor there.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting that literally you as the audience are peeking in on these guys' work lives and they're aware of it.
Right. And even some moments where the characters in the show aren't aware of it. I think even like Jim and Pam's first kiss, you know, that's the camera kind of cutting through the blinds
right.
outside
dark.
The office. Yeah, it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know that someone's there. And it's that they capture these moments that are known, that aren't known, and it's this weird kind of, you know, do they know they're always being watched? Do they really know they're being watched? Like, even outside of the workplace, because these cameras follow them to bars and to weddings
right.
and to other
right.
places.
Yeah, huh.
So this is interesting, like, because it's not just The Office, it's they follow these characters, like, to their homes and to
right.
their lives.
But they totally do, because you'll see talking heads of them at the wedding,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Steve Carell's character will literally turn to the camera, like... Like, I'm thinking when he's walking Phyllis down the aisle and she gets up and he turns around and he goes, oh, this is bull.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's so good. And I think, you know, one of the things we talked about earlier when you stated why we think this is funny is, in fact, that juxtaposition. You know, at the office workplace, you don't expect a camera crew and you
right.
definitely don't expect, you know, people to be always trying to play to the camera. You know, that's this is where this comedy really excels.
Right.
Because, you know, you can have a goofy character in weird scenarios, but when it's in the setting of the boring workplace.
Right.
Nothing happens there. It's supposed to be a normal, docile, 9-to-5 boring job.
Yeah.
A paper factory. They
yeah.
couldn't have made it more boring. Right? Paper factory.
It's pretty vanilla.
Dunder Mifflin. and yet these characters excel against this white backdrop, right?
Well, that's
jump
yeah,
off
that's,
the page.
That's the juxtaposition is, you know, our writers will put them in the craziest situations.
Right.
But this is something that you as the audience can connect with. You've had a job before. Even if you haven't had a job before, you know what a workplace is supposed to look like
right.
and what behavior is appropriate for a workplace. So you're seeing Michael Scott doing Prison Mike and you're like, oh my gosh, like he's riding the line of what is appropriate right now. And then just blaze past that line.
The bell of the ball.
Hey, it's me, Prison Mike.
You know what the worst part about prison was? The Dementors flying around. That's all of his characters that he does for that. It's just so good. And I think that's some of the things that makes it funnier. Like, it's funny having a character like Michael Scott, you know, pretend to do these characters like Prison Mike
mm-hmm.
and be these, you know, over-the-top racial characterizations
yeah.
of whoever. But in the context of this is the office workplace, it makes it more funny. It makes it more
right.
awkward. It makes it more...
You can go to that, like, next level awkward.
Right.
Where, I mean, it's never not awkward for, like, for Michael Scott's character to kiss Oscar. But it's just so much more awkward because it's in a meeting at... Oh, workplace. Like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
A meeting about homosexuality in the workplace, no less. Like, HR is, like, doing, like, backflips and, like, anxiety. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
And of course they have the HR rep who just gets walked over. Right, like, yeah. Toby's like, Michael, you can't do that. He's like, Toby, get the hell out of my office.
Yeah, and that's the icing on the cake is you have this mockumentary style, this juxtaposition of the workplace and these zany situations, and then on top of that, the characters are so well written.
Oh my gosh.
They're so true to themselves in the mockumentary style. Like, Michael Scott, who he is as a character, plays to the camera. Like, those winks are something that character would do because he knows he's being filmed, and that makes him want to be funnier.
Right.
And then when he's not funny, he's hurt by that, and he then tries to compensate for that and goes even more over the top.
Yeah.
And he really is like viewing this as his SNL audition tape because he wants to be known as somebody who's funny, loved by everyone. I love what he says. I want people to love me or fear me? No, I want people to love. Or shoot, fear how much they love me.
Yeah, yeah. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
That's so good. That's literally just like the nail on the head of who Michael Scott's character is.
Yeah.
He is so desperate for people's approval.
Yeah, exactly.
Other amazing characters is Dwight.
Oh, boy.
Are you kidding? Like, just total suck up, just like desperate for Michael's approval, like just like wants that job so much. He keeps arguing over his title.
Right. Assistant to the regional manager versus assistant regional manager. And this is, I was just going to say,
which they're very different.
They are very different. One is a personal assistant and one is like a co-regional manager.
Yeah, yeah.
But Dwight and Michael, as unique of characters as they are in the history of television, both play on really unique generalizations, like average generalizations that we all have about certain people in the workplace. The boss that we love to hate.
Right.
You know, and the worker who's just pure logic, stone cold, like says insensitive things to women and other people in the office that might just go way over his head.
Yeah.
And all these other, you know, brings weapons to work, stuff like that.
Like just total know-it-all.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. This is just so good.
Bless you.
Thanks.
You got the Dwight Schrutes.
The Schrute beats.
Yeah. And the perfect yin to Dwight Schrute's yang, I don't know if I like that sentence, but
that makes sense.
Is Jim. They literally have them seated in like a yin yang for most of the series anyways, of like balance, and how Jim is Dr. Cool. You know, he's this guy who's just the hottest in the office, clearly.
Right.
Most fun. Everyone roots for him throughout the whole series. And an interesting thing, we've talked about this, especially with Seinfeld, how there's characters in Seinfeld don't learn lessons. No hugs, no learning was their writing mantra for Larry David. There's a similar mantra here in this show because, you know, people like Michael Scott or Dwight Schrute don't learn nearly as many lessons, don't have nearly as much character development or progression or overall moral learning as people like Jim.
They're kind of, it's definitely not none like Seinfeld did. Like, you know, eventually Michael gets married to Holly.
Yeah.
And like that is a huge step from where he was at, but it took like very, very much a lot of baby steps. But there's plot moving where like Michael starts his own paper company, but definitely his characterization, he doesn't learn a lot of lessons.
No, and he's
pretty even keeled throughout the seasons of being the same.
Even with Dwight, same thing. Doesn't learn a lot of lessons. Still keeps falling for the same pranks that Jim has.
Oh, that's so good. I love their relationship and Jim's like just drive. There's an early episode where Jim says, it's kind of more of a serious moment, I feel like it speaks a lot to his character. He says, right now, this is a job for me. If I'm here for a couple more years, it becomes my career. And if this is my career, then I'll have to commit suicide. Or he says something like that. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't want this to be my career. So he's really not taking this serious. And Dwight is taking it so serious.
Oh, yeah.
So he feels like he has to poke fun at him. And he, like, I love the one where he, like, hires the actor to come
in.
Go, what? It's me, Dwight. And he has a picture of, like, him and Pam.
Oh, my gosh.
That's so good.
And that's, and I think that's one of those, I don't know, things I love about The Office is you see, you know, the disenfranchised worker, which is another way that the audience can really, like, I've been there.
Right.
I've been the Jim who's, like, just tired of this dead-end job.
You feel like you're the only normal one in the office.
Yeah, and that's what almost that's what makes these pranks that he does so much funnier, is because, of course, it's the genius from the unmotivated, almost quote-unquote slacker for
right.
a lot of the series is Jim. I mean, the conflict resolution episode, Jim just starts going through all the pranks he's done with Dwight, and it's Michael reading off the complaints, a list of complaints that Dwight's had. And my favorite one is Michael reads, he's like, I hit the phone on my head today. Wait, Dwight, is that really a complaint? And it cuts to Jim in the, you know, interview, and he's like, I slowly but surely kept filling Dwight's headset of his phone, like the phone at his office, with quarters. And after a couple months, I just took them all out. And it shows him whack! Just hits himself with his head when the phone rings.
Oh my gosh.
Ugh, I love that. I love the relationship. And America's favorite relationship, of course.
Jim and Pam.
Pam and Jim.
So good.
PB&J.
Yeah, I feel like that was even pretty groundbreaking / trendsetting of having those the relationship that you root for, that you love to see not happen. Like, it took how many seasons for them to even date?
Four,
right?
Three.
And those early seasons, like, it's just you. They torture you with it.
Oh my gosh,
she's engaged to someone else.
He's
the worst, and then they kiss, but what did that mean? But then she calls off the engagement, but then they're not back together.
And then he moves away.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, when did their stars?
Now he's dating someone else.
Oh, no. Karen Filippelli.
who's
Rashida Jones, who's in Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these actors come full circle through Parks and Rec and Office. But, yeah. And the Jim and Pam relationship, I don't know, this is just my personal thing. Like, they end up getting married, and then it's like, well, where do you go from here? Like, that's why a lot of, you know, relationship kind of sitcom stuff, it gets dragged on, and you kind of go, oh, why, will they, won't they, will they, won't they? And, like, maybe towards the end of the series they do. But in The Office, I kind of felt like, okay, like, they did it. They're married, and they have a kid, they have another kid. It's like, what's the, you know, they're not as special anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the rise and fall of this show. This show is a little famous for going a little too, a little past how many seasons they should have done.
Well, even to the point, Steve Carell bowed out at, what, season 7, after the end of season 7.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The show kept going until the end of season 9.
I think they felt a little bit on top of the world because it was so successful. It was so, like, groundbreaking and all this stuff. They were setting trends, and all these other shows were copying them. I felt like a little bit like they felt like they could keep going and that there wouldn't be any consequence to it.
Yeah. And we talked about Seinfeld, about timing is everything. And, you know, Jerry was an actual stand-up comedian. He had great natural timing. And that's not to say that Greg Daniels didn't, but certainly it's interesting to compare the two. And maybe we'll have a versus episode down the line where we really go head to head between Office versus Seinfeld, best of, you know, turn of the century comedies. But it's really interesting to look at, you know, two really amazing comedies. One went out on a high note, the highest amount of viewers ever, and one critically did not go out on a high note. You know, there was a lot of mixed reviews in the last couple seasons.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to have your lead walk off, like, just go,
mm-hmm.
like, why would you keep going? I don't know why you would. I think the money.
Well, Greg Daniels isn't fully to blame because he left to start Parks and Rec.
That's true.
Which started in the middle of this show's run. But
Damn you, Paul Liberstein.
he was a showrunner later in the series.
Yeah, okay. He's Toby in The Office, which is almost kind of double entendre because in The Office they always yell at Toby, and Paul Liberstein kept the show going. Well, he was a part of the executive producers for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Him, BJ Novak, Mindy Kaling,
yeah,
and the guy we mentioned earlier, Michael Schur.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. He was all those comprised the writing staff, and that eventually evolved into other things. But yeah, they were pretty much the main starting writing staff, and it's pretty interesting to me that how many did we name? 4 out of 5 of those people had major roles.
Seriously,
like I don't know, I
major secondary roles, but essentially, like that's a part supporting. Of the Office. If you know, there's many people whose favorite character in The Office is Mindy. I mean,
Kelly Kapoor.
Kelly Kapoor.
Yeah.
This isn't Kelly Kapoor's story hour. Someone's consumed illegal drugs on this premises. It's, I think, the drug testing, season 2.
Yeah.
Nice.
What is your favorite Office episode, just off the top of the cuff of the head?
Top of my head. Diwali, which is like Mindy Kaling's character, Kelly Kapoor. Goes to a Diwali festival.
Oh, yeah,
like with
yeah.
her family. And Michael goes there and does like Adam Sandler, famous Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live, sings the Hanukkah song. So put on your yarmulke, it's time for Hanukkah.
Hey, that was good.
Yeah, I didn't know it was in there.
Yeah.
And then Michael goes and performs the Diwali song.
Oh, no.
And it's another one of those like cringy moments. He goes, so grab your sari, it's time for Diwali.
Oh no.
And he starts so like good. Trying to name people who were practicing Hindus. It's pretty good.
That's so good. My favorite would definitely have to be grief counseling.
Oh,
when he hears that his old boss died.
Ed Truck. You know what Creed says?
Yeah, wait.
He's like, I don't even remember the context. I think he's talking to like Jim in the break room or like Michael Scott. He's like, you heard how he died, right?
Yeah.
Drunk as a skunk, driving down Highway 61, goes under a 17-wheeler. 18-wheeler.
And then later in the episode,
decapitates him.
Yeah, later in the episode, Michael is like, so here's Michael's arc. He hears this news. He is devastated. No one else is devastated. He then is now struggling with the fact that he feels like he's not going to be remembered because that guy was the boss. Nobody remembered him. He's the boss. Is anyone going to remember me? So now he's just trying, but he doesn't, he's such a child. He doesn't know how to communicate his emotions. He's trying to like, to have people remember him. And he's like talking to Stanley or someone. And Stanley's like, I don't know what even happened to him. And he goes, his kappa was detained from his head. And then later in the episode, he sees a dead bird in the parking lot, and they have a funeral for him, and that, like, somehow makes him feel better. Oh.
And they all have a little shoebox, like, coffin for him.
That's my favorite.
That's a good episode. We'll have to list those in our show notes. I didn't even think of anyone.
Scale of 1 to 10, where does The Office fall for you?
Seasons 1 through 7, 10 out of 10.
Nice. I think I cut it off at like season 5.
Yeah, well, okay, so like,
cuz that was 9 seasons total.
Yeah. I would say if we did first half versus second half, first half in my mind is like perfect sitcom.
So second, then would you say better than 30 Rock?
Yeah.
Wow.
It has I think more diverse actors, cast, laughter, types of jokes, scenarios, and it is in a more accessible format, right?
Right.
Anyone,
you could connect with it better.
Even if you haven't actually worked at a typical job, you know what the art, you know, the type of office lifestyle is.
I think I would say the same thing, but I would err on the side of 30 Rock. I think 30 Rock is a perfect 10 out of 10, and Office.
But all the way through.
Well, yeah.
That's the difference.
That's kind of the major key in Office. Had rough season one. I mean, rough-ish.
Yeah, a little.
Met with a little bit of, you know, is this going to be good? Is it not? Then it kicked into high gear.
Oh, man.
And then kind of
never turned back until it did turn back.
But yeah, I think I would give it probably like a 8.5.
I could talk forever about The Office.
Well, since you've said that, you know what time it is now. It's time for the theme song.
Wait.
What's up?
I know what you're going to do.
The next segment.
The next segment of our show. Mm-hmm. Very popular among a lot of our listeners.
Teens 19 through 30.
Yes. Teens 19 through 30. If that's what you think teenagers are.
That's the demographic, man, that listens to us.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's mostly true. This theme song has to change. You've changed this, right?
Yes. It's totally different.
Did you put... What did you end up changing about?
It's like more Christmas bells. It's majority Christmas bells.
It's a majority of Christmas bells.
Yeah, is that bad? There's like picture a live DJ scratching Christmas bells.
Skrillex Christmas.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah, I'm into it.
And now it's time for Ben's Wacky Facts.
Wacky. That was the exact same thing that it is every time.
God, darn it. I'm so sorry. I forgot to change it.
You had me believing in Christmas bells. You had me believing in Skrillex Christmix. And you just threw on the same old crap.
I'm sorry.
I don't even believe you. You're never going to change it. I don't care. Give me the facts, man.
Okay, yes, this is the time of the show where it's Ben's Wacky Facts. I give the facts, RJ rates the facts, only using terms of baseball, which he is 100% familiar with.
Yep.
Here we go. Fact number one, Creed Bratton, my favorite character and your favorite character, played a fictional version of himself. In this adaptation of The Office, a lot of the main characters were taken from the original British version. David Brent, played by Ricky Gervais, is a direct correlation to Michael Scott, played by Steve Carell. Mm-hmm. And then there's a Dwight, there's a Pam, there's a Jim. A lot of them have characters. There is no Creed for the British Office. And quite literally, he's playing himself. The actor's name in real life is Creed.
Oh, Creed Bratton is Creed Bratton.
Creed Bratton is his name. There's an episode in which he says he's making a joke about identity fraud, and he like that he took on someone's identity.
Yeah.
And he says, "My real name is William Charles Schneider." In real life, Creed Bratton changed his name from William Charles Schneider to Creed Bratton. He's literally playing a fictional characterization of himself.
BJ
Novak has said all of the tropes that he brings up, almost every situation that he talks about, it comes from a real life story from the real Creed Bratton.
That's amazing.
It's gold.
Which makes you question how much of a scumbag this guy really is.
That was the one thing that BJ Novak said. He said, the only difference between the character and the real guy is that the real guy is a peach. He's a dove. He's a great guy.
Wow. He's got a sweet face.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
For a Creed.
Yeah. It's a funny name. Especially like a, you know, the think of the band name. Even Is that Creed?
Oh.
Right?
That's not Creed.
What am I thinking of?
That is, with arms wide open.
That's what I was doing, right?
No, that Even Rude is from a different band.
The Pearl Jam?
Yeah.
Yeah. Forget about it. Look at that's a good fact.
And it's not baseball. Even Rude. It's Even Flow.
I don't care, man.
I just love how off you were.
Look at whatever. Can't hit a home run every time. But you did today.
Yay!
With this wacky fact.
I can hit a home run every time.
That's like, yeah. It's just a solid home run. Easy, simple, didn't know Creed was a Creed.
And
that's
I love funny. The detail of it, that literally his birth name is the identity.
William Charles Schneider.
Oh, so funny.
That's good.
Here's wacky fact numero trois. Is that two in French?
Un, deux, trois.
Ah, wait, three? Shoot.
That's three, yeah.
Numero two. I'm just going to stick to English. It's a totally different topic. Just kidding. Creed is... actually famous before he joins The Office, but not for being an actor. He was a musician. His band name is The Grassroots. The Grassroots, the band from the 60s. Maybe you don't remember that name, but maybe you remember their songs. Here they are.
Thank you, The Grassroots, for playing in our in-studio band. Yay!
Wow, that was an amazing live performance, Creed. Yeah, isn't that interesting? They have two gold albums, a gold single. Like, this is a real-life band, and he was in it.
Did he just stumble on the lead set guitar player of The Office?
Not even... on The Office. yeah.
He just stumbled on set, like, hey, what's going on here? Do you mind if I just join the cast?
I wonder. I really think that maybe he was close friends with one of the writers or one of the creators.
Yeah, it's just too perfect. Like, and not perfect, but just weird. I don't even know how to describe that. Yeah, this wacky fact is a real easy... the pitcher goes to throw the ball, and it's just like, you know what? Forget it. I know where this is going. Let him run around the bases. And the ump just starts clapping. Everyone starts clapping because they know it's a good one. I saw that in the game versus the Cubbies and the Dodgers.
The Cubbies. Excellent. Here is wacky fact number 3. The Office, as we have said in this podcast, is not... The U.S. Office version is not the original version. The original one was made in the U.K., but...
U.K.?
I am okay. Are you okay?
Yeah.
It is actually one of 7 different versions of The Office.
Oh.
There's not just the U.S. version. Get ready for this. There's 7 different ones. There's a French version called Le Bureau. I'm going to botch all of these...
I hope so.
...different... pronunciations, but so if you're from France, bear with me, or in
je ne sais
other
pas,
place.
As you would say.
But they're a paper company called Crepe.
Crepe? I'll translate for you.
Thanks.
It means crepe, those of you from France.
Their Michael Scott is Gilles Tarracht. There's a German version. The show is called Stromberg.
Stromberg.
They're an insurance company called Capital Versicherung AG.
Oh, sounds like a stroke.
I know, right? Their Michael Scott, his name is Bernard Stromberg.
Is it a... So he's also the name of the company? Okay. I heard a Stromberg in the...
No.
Okay.
I'm just bad at pronouncing it. Oh. There's a French-Canadian version called Le Job.
Le Job. Gotta love those Quebecians, just straight to the point.
They're also a paper company called Les Papiers Jennings.
Les Papiers.
And then get this. So the original British version, Ricky Gervais plays the regional manager, David Brent.
Yes.
So for the French-Canadian version, Le Job, their regional manager's name is David Gervais.
No.
Right?
It's a little on the nose.
I know, but I think it's a nice nod.
Yeah.
But
especially if they're the 7th adaptation.
Le Job. There's a Chilean version called La Ufis.
Okay. They're getting slazy now. Slazy. Lazy and sloppy. That was that one.
Their company is called Papiers Lezion. All of these are just French. Yeah, I'm not good at this. Their manager is Manuel Sierra. And then there's... Oh, I can't even come close. I can't even read this.
Do it.
There's an Israeli version.
Let's hear it.
And the show is called Hamizrodzin. Hamizrodad. Hamizrodad.
Hamizrodad.
Hamizrodad. Yeah?
I'm not even reading it. I know what it is.
They're an office supplies company. And their branch is called Yildun. Hudded, maybe.
Hudded.
Hudded. And, oh my gosh, their regional manager's name is Avid Nesinimidum.
Nesinimidum? Nesinimidum.
Nesinimidum?
Okay, man. What?
And last but not least, there's a Swedish version called Karnit.
Karnit?
They're a hygiene company.
No.
I can't even.
Let's hear it.
I can't do it.
You got it.
Svenik Karnishangin AB.
What a great little tag at the end. Karnishangin.
Their regional manager's name is Ov Strongbug. Songbug.
Songbug.
Ov Strongbug.
Next time on the podcast, Ben reads foreign titles of famous movies you never heard of. That's just the whole time.
That's so good.
Wow. I did not know it was that much of adaptations.
I know, I didn't either. 7 of them total.
And this is exactly what happens. You got Javier Bardem up to bat, and Mickey Manilow throws the pitch.
Oh, you're rating it right now.
Yeah, what do you think I'm doing? I'm just talking to you about the Cubbies game. What the heck's wrong with you?
I thought you were saying Javier Bardem was going to be in one of these versions. I was like, what?
No, he's up to bat, silly. The silly Billy, that's how the game goes. Javi B's up to bat. He goes, hits a long bomb, but oh, wait. It wasn't one ball. It was 7 balls. And the outfield is like, oh, we need some angels in the outfield to catch these balls. There's too many. And they go all over the place and they can't catch him. And Javi B makes it all the way around to home. 3 homers, man. That's a turkey.
No way. I turkeyed out.
You turkeyed out for the Cubbies.
The office is good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
Javi B.
for being willing to participate in our baseball game.
Oh, my God.
Now it's the time of the show where we read some mail. It's hashtag whale mail of the week.
This week's letter reads as such. It says, great job, gentlemen. You are very funny fellows indeed, and your podcast is worth every penny. I don't know if that's an insult or not, because
pennies
free. But seriously, I don't know what it is, but you got it. Couple comments. I would like to submit that the first Blues Brothers movie is by far the best SNL-inspired spinoff movie of all time. It had Ray Charles and James Brown in it, for goodness sake. And you didn't say what your favorite 30 Rock episode would be. Inquisitive minds want to know. Randy H. Sent from my iPhone. What a great letter. Compliment. Demand. Joke. Twist the knife.
It had it all.
Sent from my iPhone. Top it off. Cherry on top.
First of all, thanks, Randall, for watching the show.
Yeah, that's a huge compliment.
Yeah, we're stoked that you're enjoying the stuff.
Secondly, I don't know if I made it clear, but I'm pretty certain that I said Blues Brothers is my favorite.
We mentioned the Blues Brothers, but we kind of decided that
wasn't a lot of SNL sketches.
No, that the other one was probably the best attempt. Wayne's World.
Pat
is the best. It's Pat. It's Pat.
It's Pat. Hey, boy. No.
But to be honest, I don't know about you, but I've never seen the Blues Brothers.
Seriously?
Movie. Yeah, I've only seen Blues Brothers 2000.
Blues Brothers is the real deal.
You've seen it?
I've seen it, and I think I saw the movie before I saw the sketch, because it's like SNL season 1 sketch, right?
Right.
Dan Aykroyd, Jim Belushi. Super, super funny. And, you know, it's just got so much soul music in it, too. Yeah, James Brown's in it, for crying out loud. They're on a mission from God.
They were a real band, right?
They were, yeah.
They, like, played shows and stuff.
Yeah. So, really good movie. Thank you, Randall, for that observation. We didn't talk about favorite 30 Rock episode.
Not a chance.
Kind of. I mean, we talked about a lot of our favorite moments, but what was your favorite episode?
I don't know if I have a favorite one episode. I guess, it's either one of the ones that Kelsey Grammer is in.
Mm-hmm.
There's two different episodes where, the storyline is Jenna, Kenneth, and Kelsey Grammer, like, pull cons on people, and it's just so funny. Whenever they're in, like, a sticky situation, they call Kelsey Grammer, and it's the same thing. I love, like, when Conan does it, he just totally, like, defames his character and just, like portrays himself as just a dirtbag con artist on the show, and it is so funny. Favorite line from the episode is when he's buying cakes that are purposely messed up so he can sell them back, and he asks for a cake that says "Happy 20 reunion, Frager."
Frager.
And she says, "Frager, really?" And he goes, "I think I would know. I'm Frager."
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. I think I talked about this episode, but I didn't know if I clarified. My favorite episode is the reunion where Liz is debating going back to her high school reunion or not, and yeah. she takes Jack with her, and he is, you know, I don't want to go.
He's depressed because he's not getting the CEO job because right. his boss just came out of a coma and yeah. didn't give it to him.
And so he pretends to be Larry Braverman because someone's like, "Larry?
Larry?
Larry Braverman, is that you?" He's like, "Yes. I am Larry Braverman.
That's so good. Thank you so much, Randall. RJ, where can people find us?
Yeah, you can find our podcast on the iTunes podcast app, Google Play, or Stitcher. Be sure to check out our Twitter page at WhalePod, WhalePod, or our Facebook page, Why Am I Laughing? And don't forget to email us at whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com. Send us anything. We will read it. Doesn't matter. Profanities or just love letters. Either or. You can find me at Twitter at Rodolfo the Brown. You can find Ben at Hello Kitty Attorney at Law.
Yeah, thanks to everyone who's been emailing in. We heard your emails, and we have a Facebook page. So, like RJ said, you can search Facebook for Why Am I Laughing. It's a community of fans. Go there, start a conversation, say hi to each other. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. We want to thank bensound.com for all of our theme musics. Yeah, if you like us, if you are having a good time and maybe some chuckles come out of you while you listen to these earwaves, go ahead.
Chunkles? Yeah. If you're throwing up while listening to our podcast.
It's laughing while puking.
Yeah. Why am I puking?
Why am I puke laughing?
Yeah.
If you're afflicted with these and other diseases, go ahead and rate us on iTunes. It helps us out. And we would appreciate that. And it's just good to hear from you guys. So thanks for tuning in this week. Like we love to say, comedy for us and eternity will always and shall be about
Leslie timing. David Baker.